Good afternoon, and thanks for joining us for today's new Healthline. I'm Courtney Butts, your host, and Healthline is where we like to focus on ways to live a healthier, happier, and pain-free life. We'll be taking your calls and answering your questions live in the studio today. We'll be opening those phone lines soon, but as a reminder, please make sure you're in a quiet room when you call with your TV turned all the way down so that we can hear your question. Our number is 318-219-4569, and April is Head and Neck Cancer Awareness Month, and joining me to talk about this is Dr. G.E. Golly with Willis Knighton Oral and Maxillofacial Surgery. Good afternoon, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Courtney. I'm glad to be here.
Absolutely. We talked a little bit in our midday newscast about head and neck cancers. And can you just tell me again, what are the common cancers of the head and neck?
Well, the most common cancers in the head and neck, and we're talking about anything from the top of the head to the collarbones or the clavicles. And obviously, when we're talking about head and neck cancers, we're not talking about like brain tumors or brain cancers. It's cancers that occur in the head, on the outside, the scalp, the face, the neck, the mouth, the throat, base of tongue area, maybe even the voice box, and maybe even the thyroid or the parathyroid glands. So by far the most common cancer in the head neck area is just skin cancers that occur from sun exposure, squamous cell carcinomas and basal cell carcinomas. But second to that, we would be, the most common cancers would be those that involve the mouth or the throat.
Right. Okay, and skin cancer, it's one of the most common cancers. So what is a good way to screen for something like that?
Well, honestly, the best way to screen is with your primary care doctor or with your dermatologist, where they can actually screen. And it's not enough just to look at the face or the head, neck, actually the entire body. Squamous cell and basal cell cancers, they're cancers. They don't tend to spread so easily or so quickly, so they can be treated pretty locally with sometimes you can use cryotherapy, sometimes you can use lasers, sometimes you can cut them out and things like that. But when you're talking about more of the melanoma type cancers, then that's a lot more serious. Those cancers tend to spread rapidly and quite early. So you have the squamous cells and the basal cells and the melanomas of the skin. They tend to be very common in the head and neck opposed to other parts of the body because many of those types of cancers are directly related to sun exposure.
Right.
So, you know, going out and sunbathing and, you know, I get on my girls all the time that they don't put enough sunblock on and things like that. And certainly I was guilty of that. When I grew up, I'm much younger than you. When I grew up, oh, we didn't wear any sunblock at all. I can remember getting blistered. But those are the most common types of head and neck cancers. But when we're talking specifically about cancers of the head and neck, most of the time we're talking about cancers that involve the mouth, the throat, the base of tongue, and the voice box in those areas.
Right. And so sun exposure obviously is a risk factor. What are some other risk factors for these types of cancers?
Sure. For cancers that involve the mouth and the throat, I'll talk about mouth first. And sort of the mouth cancers are typically ones that are associated with smoking and drinking. Those are really the two most common causes. And the smoking and drinking can be done independently, but oftentimes people that smoke also drink, and there's sort of an additive effect with that. A lot of that is time related, how long you've smoked and how often, or how long you've drank and how often. When you start getting, Courtney, going back further in the throat, like what we call the base of the tongue, the back of the tongue, and not just like here, but I mean way in the back, almost by the epiglottis, what we call the base of the tongue, or the area where the tonsils are located. That area, base of tongue and tonsils, it's still smoking and drinking has a relationship, but then another variable comes in that we've become more aware of over the past 20 years or so, and that's HPV, human papillomavirus. And there's, you know, half a dozen different types that are most concerning, but it's the same type of virus that causes cervical cancer in women. can be associated with base of tongue, throat, and tonsillar cancer in both men and women.
Okay, interesting. And I feel like that's something that's maybe not talked about a lot, would you say?
Yeah, it's not talked about, and mainly because it's sort of become a sexually transmitted disease. Mm-hmm. And but quite frankly, there's a very a new but effective vaccine, the Gardasil vaccine, that's recommended for anyone age 45 and under, particularly those that may be immunosuppressed and things like that. And it's very, very effective at preventing the development of HPV-related cancers all over the body, as well as those that occur in the throat.
Right. And so vaccines are a great way to prevent vaccine-preventable diseases or cancers. What about other important things that we need to know about preventing head and neck cancers?
Well, again, obviously, as you mentioned, if possible, avoiding smoking and excessive smoking or excessive alcohol consumption. When it relates to HPV, getting the vaccination if you're in that appropriate age group. Again, it's not recommended for above age 45, but that could change. You know, that could change mm-hmm. in the coming years. But I think one of the most critical factors, and this is a great question that you ask about how can we prevent them, screenings, just like you go for colon cancer, mm-hmm. Just like you go for other types of cancers, doing routine breast exams for breast cancer, both at the physician's office as well as at home. So I will tell you, when it comes to the majority of cancers associated with head and neck cancers, those that occur in the mouth or in the throat, doing good oral cancer screenings is important.
Mm-hmm.
So how do I do that?
Right.
How do I do these oral cancer screenings? Well, you do the oral cancer screenings by going to see your dentist twice a year. The dentist typically does Most dentists should do oral cancer screenings. It literally takes 2 minutes to do an oral cancer screening in a dental office. It's either done by the dentist, or it could be done by the dental hygienist, mm-hmm. Or something like that. And so certainly doing these oral cancer screenings, because the whole key to this problem, to this issue, is being able to catch the cancer early.
Right.
Oftentimes you can see a white area or a red area on your tongue, underneath your tongue, and on your cheek, on your lips, in the back of your throat. Those are signs that something's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully 80 to 90% of the time it ends up being nothing at all. But it will pick up those early cancers. So the oral cancer screenings are very, very important. Dentistry and the dental profession has sort of taken the lead in being able to do these oral cancer screenings. But certainly you can go to oral surgeons' offices, you can go to ENT doctors, you can go to your family practitioner. If they see something unusual, they'll refer it to a higher level of care.
Mm-hmm.
But they, so important to do oral cancer screenings, just like you would. And it's so easy. I mean, it's not like it's not difficult and cumbersome like you know, going to get a colonoscopy,
right,
or something, where they need to put you to sleep, and you know, you're scared of it, and you got to drink all that stuff that mm-hmm. you know, nobody likes to drink. Oral cancer screenings are very simple, Courtney. I mean, it literally takes 2 minutes to do it, and can be done. You can do some preliminary screenings on your own by kind of grabbing your tongue and pulling it out and looking, but it's probably best to be done by a trained professional.
Mm-hmm. And you know, you bring up a good point, because I bet when you go to the dentist, they're checking, and you may not even know that they're checking, right?
Right. You may not even know what you're checking. You can ask them. And most of the time, most hygienists and most dentists are trained, particularly hygienists, if you go every 6 months and get mm-hmm. your teeth cleaned. Most of them are very attuned at doing these oral cancer screenings. And you know, as an oral surgeon, I get quite a few referrals every year that I know are coming from hygienists, because they're very good at picking that up.
When I, for one, I'm probably the minority here, but I love going to the dentist. I don't know what it is. I just love it. I know that most people
You're in the minority.
Right. I love the feeling afterwards, let's say mm-hmm. that. But so for someone that does not like to go to the dentist, you know, what would you recommend for them? Maybe the sleep therapy? I know that that's a big thing now. You can go to the dentist and do that, but...
Yeah, I mean, an oral cancer screening is not really an invasive process. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to get a shot or anything like that. So it's a fairly benign process. So they really shouldn't be worried about that. And if they can handle a tooth cleaning, and I know some people can't, you know, but if they can handle getting their teeth cleaned, they can easily handle an oral cancer screening. Mm-hmm.
And it's so important, as you've mentioned, early prevention or early screening.
Absolutely.
So that, you know, you can take care, be in front of it early.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. So what are some symptoms of head and neck cancers? There are many, I'm sure, but what are some of the commons?
Well, that's a good question. Some people would say pain, but you know, pain is actually not a very early sign of oral cancer. It's usually a later sign, or if you end up getting a swelling somewhere and you bite on it and hurt it traumatically, mm-hmm. injure it, then it becomes quite painful. But honestly, the most common signs of an oral cancer is the appearance of an irregularity that you can feel with your tongue or with your cheek. You know how you're constantly moving things around in your mouth and you can mm-hmm. kind of feel when something feels irregular, like if you crack a tooth and you feel a sharp edge. So oftentimes you'll feel an irregularity. It could be an ulcer, it could be a bump, it could be a red area, it could be a white area. But usually that's the very first sign, is you feel some kind of lump or bump in your mouth. Again, pain is sort of a later sign of it. You may get some swelling that you can kind of feel and see. Unfortunately, some people don't even notice that they have something, and then they get a later sign, which is they get a lump in their neck. Mm. So what we find is that cancers that occur in the mouth and the throat area, if they're going to spread, and they spread typically, these are carcinomas for the most part. Carcinomas spread lymphatically through the lymphatic system. Mm-hmm. And the number one lymphatic system associated with the mouth and throat area is the lymphatics, or the lymph nodes that are in the neck. Mm-hmm. So oftentimes, sometimes someone's very first sign of cancer is, I have a lump in my neck. You know, I was putting my tie on, or I was putting my shirt on, or the lady may say, or a guy may say, I'm putting my makeup on, mm-hmm. and I feel this lump in my neck. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, sometimes that's the very first sign. The problem with that is, like all cancers, oral cancers of the throat are staged. And the staging process helps determine what the prognosis of the patient is. And once you get a lymph node in your neck, and if that has cancer that's spread in there, that's a fairly late finding. And so the goal is, just like you mentioned earlier, is early screening for these oral cancers.
So from your experience, what stage do you usually find individuals with head and neck cancer?
Right. With head and neck cancers, you know, like all cancers, there's basically four stages: stage one, stage two, stage three, and stage four. And obviously, it's better to catch them in the earlier stages, stage one and stage two. Fortunately, a majority of the cancers that we see are in stage one and stage two.
That's good.
And that's good. But depending on where the cancer is located, depending on where the patient lives, depending on their access to health care and things like that, we will see occasionally, I've seen in the last couple of months, at least three or four patients that are stage three or stage four. Mm. And that requires more aggressive treatment.
Right. Well, we have a caller on the line. Brenda, what is your question?
Well, I have a tooth that my gum then grew over. It's broke. The cap on top of it is broken. I was wondering what serious problem is that? Do I have to have surgery? Can I be sleep?
So the question is, she's got a tooth that's broken? And is that right?
Can you repeat your question just one more time?
Yes, the tooth is broken, and my gum is grown. It's almost grown over it. You know, you see pieces. I can feel pieces sticking up.
Okay.
But I was wondering, I don't know how serious, if you know how serious that is, or what do I do? Do I have to be put to sleep to get that out?
Not necessarily. You could probably just go to your dentist and they can have that tooth removed with just some local anesthesia. Unless the tooth is impacted or something, it generally won't require that you be put to sleep. But
it's just
again,
a knick-knack.
What's that, ma'am? I'm sorry.
I've just been neglecting as it was falling apart.
Okay. Yeah.
No,
all
okay.
Right.
Yeah, maybe. Now I have another tooth that's really, it's in there, but they tap in and it's really dark, and it's been in there for about 15 years. Now, what do I need to do for that?
Well, I don't know.
That's not cancer.
So you probably would need to go see your dentist and have them do an evaluation of you and take x-rays and then come up with a treatment plan. Yeah.
Do you know a good dentist that would see about problems like that?
There's a lot of good dentists here in town, for sure. And where do you live, in Shreveport? Yeah? Very good. All right.
Thank you, Brenda, for your question. If you're just joining us, you can give us a call at 318-219-4569. We're talking specifically about head and neck cancers. We have Dr. G.E. Golly here from Willis Knighton Oral and Maxillofacial Surgery. And so we'll just continue our conversation with our head and neck cancer.
Good.
So we were talking about staging really just previously. And so how do you typically, or how would you diagnose, oral, throat, and tongue cancers?
Right. So typically, a majority of cancers can be identified clinically by actually seeing the cancer. And then there's a minority of them that you can't see, and you may have to pick up with additional imaging, CT scans or PET scans or things like that. Once we're able to assess the extent of the primary cancer, whether there's lymph node involvement, we can do sort of a preliminary staging of the patient. And that really brings up an important point, Courtney, that cancers in this region are very, very complex. And I don't know if you remember, we were talking at some point about cleft lip and palate stuff and how important it is to have multidisciplinary management of those kiddos, including dietary and everything else. Well, it's even more important with head and neck cancer, because you're talking about areas of the body that involve many different specialties, many different types of health professions. And when we treat cancers in this area, it involves breathing and smelling and swallowing and tasting and just about everything. And so multidisciplinary involvement is important in the management of these patients. It doesn't just include a surgeon, but it includes radiation oncology. It includes hematology oncology, speech, dietary. I mean, a lot of specialties are involved. And so it's important to go somewhere where they have a comprehensive cancer center. And in this report, we're very fortunate because we have two or three of these comprehensive centers right here in the Shreveport-Bossier community.
Yeah, that's good. That's good to know too. But you want to feel supported when you're going through something like that, for sure. Well, we have Calvin on the line. Calvin, what is your question?
I had a keloid surgery here last year. About the second one I got done. I want to know what it does.
We're having a hard time hearing you, Calvin. Do you mind repeating your question for us?
It's a keloid removal, back of my head.
Oh, okay.
Keloid surgery removal.
Yeah. I just had a second done, so what does it do about it?
Yeah, well, we're not really specifically talking about keloids. There are some cancers that can develop within scar tissues and even within keloids. But, you know, I recommend you go get that checked out with your doctor. And see, or with your dermatologist, certainly. But cancers can develop within scars. You know, they call them marginal ulcers. So that's not uncommon. But specifically, keloid in of itself is generally not necessarily a huge risk factor for the development of head and neck cancer. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Calvin, for your question. If you're just joining us, you can give us a call at 318-219-4569. The number's right there on your screen. And we're again talking about head and neck cancers. So if you have a question specific to that, we have Dr. G.E. Golly that would be happy to answer your question. Yeah, okay. So what types of surgery or treatment options would you be participating in with head and neck cancer?
Another good question, Courtney. When it comes to treatment, there's been significant improvements over the last quarter of a century. And I'll subset out the HPV-associated cancers first, those that occur in the base of tongue, posterior third of the tongue, base of tongue, throat, tonsil areas. Those HPV-related cancers overall tend to do much better using primary chemo radiation as a treatment modality. Not to say that surgery is never done, but mainly chemotherapy and radiation. When it comes to the cancers that occur in the anterior part of the mouth, the anterior two-thirds of the tongue, the floor of the mouth, the cheeks, the majority of the tongue, then generally, again, depends on the stage, but certainly for stage one and stage two cancers, surgery is a primary treatment modality. And importantly, the goal of surgery in managing these folks with oral cancer is to be able to completely remove the cancer, mm-hmm. along with any associated lymph nodes, and to then restage the patient as part of a multidisciplinary tumor board, and then come up with the best any post-operative treatment that may be required. For example, if a patient is completely removed of the cancer, all the margins are negative, and the nodes are not involved with any cancer, then that's all the treatment that they may need. They may not require any additional post-surgical chemotherapy or radiation.
Correct. Okay.
And the goal in reconstructing the patients is to take them to their pre-surgical form to try to reconstruct their tongue. So we're doing very complex transfer of tissues from other parts mm-hmm. of the body microvascularly to reconstruct the areas of the head and neck.
Right. Okay. Well, mm-hmm. we have Ann on the line. Do you have a question for Dr. Golly today?
I do. I was told that I had a cancer in the back of my throat about February the 9th. I went to an emergency room the next day. Everybody kept saying to go see an ENT. I went to see an ENT. He didn't set up a scan until March 20th. I think it's the 20th of March, and some 39 days later, so I lost to my legs, and it ended up, then he set up with another ENT, and he recommended another doctor, and I've lost about 3 months of trying to get something done. I finally had a PET scan. Yes, I don't know, the 21st. And I'm wondering, are there newly invented chemo things that are better than the old ones that I've heard about for the back of the mouth cancer?
Yes. So you had a PET scan. How long ago was your PET scan, you said?
The 23rd of April.
23rd of April, so pretty recently.
I found out about it. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, I found out about it on the February 9th, but I couldn't seem to get to the right person. I mean,
yeah.
Or get anything done.
Yes, and that's not unusual, and it's difficult sometimes to get PET scans approved, believe it or not. It's a dilemma with I'm sorry?
It wasn't approval. It was a matter of me finding the right doctor. I mean, neither one mentioned that they did the surgery, and I didn't know if Shreveport even had a cancer surgeon. You know, because I've always heard about Dallas and Houston, of course.
I got
you. But I didn't actually know if Shreveport had one, and I was hoping we did.
Right. So I mean, and that brings up a good point. Also, is that there? You know, people think about Dallas. They think about Houston. You know, MD Anderson, and certainly, you know, there's certain unusual cancers that are treated at MD Anderson because they have access to certain federally funded or federally supported clinical trials and things like that. But for the common cancers that we're talking about in the head and neck, Shreveport, Bossier is very, very, has great doctors and great surgeons that are very capable of taking care of the problem. I'm sorry you had such a delay or difficulty in getting that. Are you getting your treatment underway now?
I have an appointment next Monday with an oncologist, which sounds like I might be getting on my way now.
Okay, good.
I still have not seen a surgeon, and I would like to see a surgeon to see if it can be cut out. But I'm sure this oncologist will I will ask that he recommend a surgeon, but I am just thrilled to death to know that we have one here in Shreveport.
Well, we do, and you can look us up, and thank you so much, and we pray that you continue to do well.
For sure, yeah, and where can we find you, Dr. Golly?
At Willis Knighton.
Yeah, okay. Phone number?
Your website?
Phone number?
You're asking me hard things about my phone number. I don't remember my phone number.
Okay, well, maybe look up Dr. Golly Willis Knighton. There we go.
I won't be that hard to find.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, well, we have Sheila on the line. Sheila, what's your question?
Hi, this is Sheila. Is it necessary that it will be cancer if your lymph nodes swell and your blood work come back okay, and they took an MRI test and it come back okay, but I still have the same problem? They think it's a tooth. Went to the dentist. They said it's not the tooth, and they wrote me a referral to go see an ear and throat doctor with my lymph nodes is still swollen.
And so did they do, they did a biopsy of your lymph node, or did they put a needle in it and do a needle aspiration or anything like that?
No, not yet. So I got an appointment tomorrow morning. So I guess that's going to be my next step once I take the paperwork back to let them know it's not the tooth. So I'm a little scary about the whole situation because this has lingered about a good 2 months now.
Right. Well, I think you're doing the right thing, and make sure you follow up tomorrow and go from there. But I think you're doing the right thing. You're in the right direction.
Well, we've had some awesome questions for you, Dr. Golly, today. And we have just a couple of minutes left. And so you help treat head and neck cancers, but you also do other things as well, correct?
Right. Sure.
And but specifically for head and neck cancer, you would be a part of that the person's care team.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm more than comfortable and happy to do the surgery, but we have a team that's involved, both on the ablative end, which means the removal of the cancer, as well as on the reconstructive end. It's one thing to take it out, but we have to reconstruct. You can imagine if you can't just remove, you could remove a half of somebody's tongue, but you just don't want to take it and leave it that way or just close it on itself. You want to replace the missing tissue.
Right.
And so we have an expertise in being able to replace that missing tissue from tissue that we harvest from other parts of the same person's body.
Okay, gotcha. Or even maybe it's Donate Life Month, maybe a tissue donation? as well, or maybe not?
Not so much with that. Gotcha. It needs to be from the patient themselves.
Okay, well, that's good to know. Okay. Right. Well, if you're just tuning in and missed our Healthline segment today, you can head to ktbs.com/healthline3 to listen to the full episode on our Healthline podcast. And thanks, Dr. Ghali, for joining us. I learned a lot.
Thanks,
and
Courtney.
Always a pleasure with having you.
Thank you.
We hope you have a happy and a healthy day.